technology all at the same time. You know, it just depends on who's imposing it upon me. So we've talked already a bit about how God is on the move, and he has invited us and called us and commanded us to be a part of this adventure. And we talked about how being part of that adventure means that we are growing in love for God. We're cultivating a love for God in our hearts. That our love is demonstrated by our obedience to his commands. Not because we have to earn salvation, not because we're afraid of other people, but because we love God and we want to demonstrate our love for him. And we talked about how when we walk that out, when it affects our prayer life, prayers don't become, let's twist the arm of God and get him to do what we want him to do. But instead, let's build a relationship with God. That because we live in a broken, fallen world, we'll address the fact that we're sinful and that we have needs and rely on him. But it'll also, because we've got another foot in heaven at the same time, be about what does it look like when we don't have the sin and when we don't have those needs, and how do we cultivate that kind of relationship? Because I don't know about you, I don't want to wait until eternity to start working on that one. Mm-hmm. I kind of want to start working on it now and imagine what life would be like now if God and I are walking together as friends. And I think that that's possible, to be a friend of God and to acknowledge his holiness all at the same time. And it's a mystery to me, but I believe that it's totally possible, because there are moments when I'll be sitting there walking and talking with God or driving in my pickup through the backwoods of Oregon, and then all of a sudden it's like I moved into worship. And so it's amazing how that candid conversation can blend seamlessly into acknowledging the holiness and presence of God and feeling him very close beside me in that journey. So all of those are important. Now, the mistake that many people make before they move on to engaging a lost and fallen world is that they'll go, I have to have the perfect love and I have to have the perfect relationship with God before I can engage others. And yet that is not what we are called to do. We are, in as little as we know, to begin calling people to come alongside with us. If you'll remember the Shema that I read to you this morning, where it says, Hear, O Israel, the Lord your God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your strength. And it says, Impress these things upon your children. Walk with them. Talk about them when you're walking on the streets, when you sit at the table, when you get up in the morning, and when you lie down. And the idea there is that it is to be a natural part of your life. Now, when I became a father, so my background is theater and dance. When I was in high school, I did the math. I said I could be on the football team, and it's like 40 guys competing for the attention of 12 girls. Or I could be in the dance troupe, which is 40 girls and 3 guys competing for their attention. And so I did the math, and I was like, I like the odds better when it's 3 and 40. And so people would ask me, what did you do this weekend? And I'd tell them, I said, I spent the whole weekend picking up girls. Because that's what I did. I picked them up and I put them down, and that was considered to be dance. And it was pretty awesome. I was given most improved, and I actually have a letter on my letter jacket for dance and for choir. So that's my background. At the same time, I did weightlifting and rock climbing, which is really funny. When I studied Taekwondo later, he said, throw a roundhouse kick, and I threw one. And he said, how long have you been studying Taekwondo? And I said, ballet, baby. It all comes together eventually. And so I thought all of that would make me an amazing father. I was going to be the dad that did hours of play acting with my children. And we would sit there and conquer the beaches of Normandy together. And we were going to have great forts built in the backyard. And we were going to have those grenades. And we were going to just conquer the world and be pirates for a day and then be the ones that destroyed the pirates later. You know, that was the envision. And then I had a daughter. And I was like, well, okay, I can do this. I can imagine my way into being a good dad of a daughter as well. And my first tea party, 10 minutes in, I found myself checking my BlackBerry underneath the table. And let me just tell you, my 18-month-old, almost two-year-old daughter appreciated that about as much as my wife does. And I felt terrible. I was like, oh my goodness, what's my problem? How am I going to build a relationship with this, my daughter, when I don't know even, I can't even maintain the focus to play tea party with her? And then I read this passage and it relieved me. It didn't say, thou shalt play tea party with thy daughter. Instead, it said, as you are going, take her with you. And the basics of making disciples does not begin with knowing a presentation or being an eloquent speaker. It begins with being in the process of building a relationship with God, of falling more deeply in love with Him, and taking other people, even our children, along with us as we go. So making a disciple was putting my daughter at the age of 2 in the pickup truck and driving her to Home Depot and us pushing and getting things. And as I'm paying out, she says, Daddy, what are you doing? And I say, well, baby, God gave Daddy the ability to work. And when I work, I get money in return. And I'm using the money that God gave us to reward other people for the hard work they've done so that I can paint the house. And she's sitting there thinking about that. And not only is she listening to that and internalizing that, but also the woman behind the cash register gets to listen to that and internalize that, of how this world works with God giving us the ability to work and earn money and us in turn responding in appreciation for the work of others so that we can complete the work He's put in front of us. Discipling became us going in, realizing that my optimistic entrepreneurship got us $60,000 in debt. And in order to save my marriage, I ended up finding a gentleman named Dave Ramsey. Mm-hmm. And I'm very grateful for his ministry and the work he's done in my own heart in teaching me how to be smart with money, because I ignored all the things that my father taught me and didn't learn them until Dave Ramsey said the very same things to me. So, and now as fathers, I understand the same frustration when my kids come back to me and said, you should hear what my youth minister said about Jesus. And I'm like, do you want me to pull out the recording? I promise I said that and you were in the service. So, but sometimes it takes another person saying it for us to hear it. And Dave Ramsey was the one for me. And it ended up, the principles he taught me has saved my marriage. And it's been very awesome. We paid down over $60,000 worth of debt. We've still got a few 20-year-old stakes to pay down. But, you know, we're in process. And it's been good. And it's been good for all of us. But as we were in the process of learning that, I took my daughter to the grocery store with the cash-only envelope and a calculator, because we had $100 to spend on groceries that week for all of us. And I'm sitting here going through and typing in the numbers and everything, and she goes, Daddy, I want that snack. And I was able to look at her and say, hey, sweetheart, you know, Mommy and Daddy, we're trying to live within the means because God has convicted us that our consumer debt is not good. And so we're trying to live within the means of what He's given us. And so we could get that snack. But in order to get that snack, we're going to have to put this one up. Which one do you want? And then she made the decision, and then she put the other one back on the shelf. And that is part of making disciples too, is bringing alongside people with us. And when it's your family, it's kind of easy to do. But how do we make disciples of people that aren't living in our household, that may not jump into the car with us because we don't have a relationship with them? Well, I believe that we're called to go and engage people, to get to know them. And by now, I hope that you would know enough of me to know that I believe that it should be incredibly fun. Because if it's not fun, we're probably not going to sustain the lifestyle for very long. So I'll give you an example. I have been trained in the Baptist process of evangelism called faith. I've been trained in the Roman Road. I've looked at Evangelism Explosion. I've looked at all these different ones. And a lot of them involve going door to door and knocking on doors. And I used to be on those teams that would go take all the names of people that visited the church and go knock on their doors on Sunday and talk to them. I'm an extrovert. On the Myers-Briggs test, I test out 100% extrovert. On a bad day, I'm 98%. So that's who I am. But I was also the fellow who, as we're walking up to the door, I'm like, oh God, please don't let them be home. I don't want to interrupt their life any more than they want me to interrupt their life. And so there's got to be a better way. But if you could just make sure they're not home right now, I would greatly appreciate that. And then I'd look at the team and be like, all right, guys, let's go. You know, trying to gut out something that I was religiously supposed to do, but knew in my heart that I was not made to do. And I didn't feel like it was the right way. It wasn't the way we used to do it overseas, because that way would have gotten a shot. But it was the way we were doing it in America. And I became to the point where I'm like, why are we doing this? This makes no sense to me. But then I started realizing, you know what? There are more fun ways to engage people who don't know Jesus. So I would start doing random things. So each year, my family, we try to pick a new skill that we want to learn. So, and I might plan, if I plan far enough ahead, I'll ask for all the equipment I need for Christmas. So it doesn't cost me anything to go into the new thing. So this coming year, this coming Christmas, I'm asking for fly fishing equipment. And that way, next summer, I can work on adding fly fishing to my fishing. And we call it fishing because we don't believe in catching. I'm not very good at the catching, but I love the fishing. Okay. And then next Christmas, it's going to be ham radio. So I hope to be able to get my kids involved with me and us to get our ham radio licenses and begin to do that. And I can ask for all the equipment during Christmas that would set us up for that. Because I like going hunting in places where T-Mobile doesn't have service. And whereas I normally am okay with that, there's a slight bit of the EMT in me that doesn't like to be out of communication with anybody range. And so having that equipment would be kind of nice. And not only that, it'd just be cool. And it'd be fun to do with my son and my daughter and everything. So we pick a different hobby to learn, and then we try to find people who can teach it to us. So my next door neighbor is a great guy. I love him a lot. He's 65 years old, and we've been building a relationship. Well, I wanted to go hunting in Oregon and fishing in Oregon, and when you get those things, those books that tell you where to and how not to, they're a little intimidating at first. So I just looked at my neighbor and I said, hey, Russ, do you like to fish? He's like, yeah. Could you take me and show me how to do it here in Oregon? Because those books are scary. He's like, yeah. And then we're fishing for a while and everything. And Russ, do you like to shoot? Well, yeah. You know, could we sight in this new rifle and everything that I got the other day? You know, and then do you hunt? Yeah. Could you take me along and show me how to hunt? Because I know how to shoot, but I've always wanted to hunt. And I've never done that. And I'm kind of intimidated to do that in Oregon for the first time. It's like, sure. So last summer, or fall, I ended up, wasn't enough time for me to get my license. But I followed him around with the camera. And I shot while he shot. And it was a lot of fun. And then this time around, we got in early enough and we drew tags. And so we'll be in Lapine here in a couple of weeks. We'll go out next Thursday to sight in our rifles and we'll be in Lapine. That's how you make relationships with people. I have found the best way to make relationships with people is to ask them to teach you to do something. So I've got an old pickup. That's intentional. When it starts breaking down a lot, I'm going to find somebody who can come over and help me fix it and teach me how to do it in the process. Why? Because old pickups are a whole lot easier to fix yourself than these newfangled things they've got coming out. You know? Those are the kind of things. And each one of them is a load of fun. And the cool thing is I don't have to do it longer than a year. I can get 6 months in and go, do I like this? Yeah, I kind of like it. All right. Well, then I'm going to keep going. And then I get in a year and I go, do I really like this? And a lot of times I'm ready to move on. I'm like, that's a new skill set. Okay, let's go. So it's really funny. I know how to smoke cigars. It's a skill. You know, I don't prefer it. It's not something that I just love to do. But I was in Idaho the other day, and one of the guys that was in a class, he goes, hey, do you like to smoke cigars? And I said, sure, why not? And so he's like, well, let's go have some steak and smoke cigars. I'm like, okay. So I went with him. We went to the cigar shop. We start talking. The other guy's talking to the cigar shop owner. Turns out the cigar shop owner was a believer who doesn't go to church. He hasn't gone to church in a long time. So they're sitting there talking, and they talked about how he used to have a Bible study that met in the loft of his cigar shop called the Holy Smokes. And they would sit and read C.S. Lewis and other books like that and have spiritual conversations. And it kind of fizzled out after a while. And as we were leaving, I looked at my buddy and I said, "Hey, you know how I would start a discovery Bible study here and start working with men?" I said, "I would come to this cigar shop every Friday. I would buy a cigar and I'd sit down and smoke it with the guys. Not because I like cigars, because I want to reach these folks." After a few months, I would have built a relationship with his owner, and I would have gotten his permission to start a Bible study in the top of the cigar shop again. And I would have done that as long as it took me in order to raise up someone else who likes smoking more than I do and would be able to lead that study, and I'd move on and hopefully repair my damaged lungs. So these are the kind of things that I think about. Now, I don't have an addictive personality. Cigars are not my thing, and I've never smoked cigarettes. So I literally can take it or leave it. It does not bother me. So in this case, I feel good about being able to go in there. Now, I know that if I smoke a cigar way too fast, the next day is miserable. But you know, I looked at my wife, and she says, "Well, are you going to smoke cigars?" And I said, "No. I just know how to." The other day I was in Boy Scouts and there was a man there who rarely talks to anyone. I mean, he's just one of those quiet fellows. And I told my wife, I said, "You know, in Oregon, beer is a thing. And there are a lot of men out there who brew their own beer. And I'd be interested to see what that's like." And she, being a scientist, thought that would be a great idea. And so she went and got me a Mr. Brew kit. You know, the little plastic ones. And with the paste that you pour in and all that kind of stuff. And so I started it going. And I just happened to, I had overheard this guy talk about brewing beer one time. And I sidled up next to him. And I said, "Hey, Damon, you brew beer, right?" He goes, "Well, yeah." I said, "You know what? I got a little kit going in my kitchen or my closet right now." He goes, "Yeah?" I said, "Yeah." I said, "You got any pointers?" And he goes, "Dude." And he pulls out his cell phone and starts showing me the vats he has in his garage and the redone cooler that he has, like the chest freezer that he's drilled holes in so that he could load up the kegs and all of that kind of stuff. And I started just asking him questions because I knew nothing. It was wonderful. And I'm sitting here talking. Well, apparently about once a quarter, he and some other guys get together and they throw some meat on the barbecue and they just try each other's beers. And I'm like, "So if I started brewing some beer at my house, do you think I could score an invite?" He's like, "Eh, you know, and I'm pretty sure I could." Now, I'm not super into brewing the beer. I mean, I did it once, and then I've got the kit sitting there, and I just haven't had time to get back to it. So it's not a super passion of mine. But it might be something that I could find a guy who is passionate about and sit there and say, "Hey, could you do this? And do you mind doing this and go hanging out with people who don't know Jesus and swap stories and join maybe a club?" And that could be an interesting thing. One time, I was in Dallas, Texas. And my kids like playing Pokemon, the card game. Not the video game at the time, the card game. And so I learned how to play it so I could play with them. But Pokemon was not my jam. Okay? Magic the Gathering, on the other hand, now that I liked.
Yeah.
Okay? And so I'm sitting here like, okay, driving down the streets of Texas, and this was the time when I was traveling so much, and I'm trying to think of how do I connect with my children. And I was getting bored of Pokemon because those games are really long and my kids didn't really know how to read and we're trying to make this thing work and all that kind of stuff. And I drove past this Super Target and I looked over, and in the Super Target there was an area about this size that was a food court. So they had a Starbucks and a Pizza Hut filled with tables, and it was empty on a Saturday night from 6 to 8. I watched it and I was like, I could start a Pokemon club. And so I went home and I told my wife, "I'm going to start a Pokemon club. Families can bring their kids together and we're going to play Pokemon together and whatever else other games they do, and it'll be at the Super Target so you don't have to worry about cleaning up the house. And they're going to love it because that's where the kids will buy stuff, and parents can either stick around or they can go shopping while we're hanging out there." And so I told my kids, I said, "Guess what? Daddy's going to start a Pokemon club just for you. Why don't you go invite all your friends?" The first time we had like 8 people show up. The second time we had 14. And the parents would sit there and engage with me either as I played with their kids or as I sat around sipping Starbucks along the edges. And everyone loved it. I got to know the people who did Starbucks. I got to know all the parents in there. I had been a youth minister in my past. I was a really bad one for a year and 11 days. And I was great with the kids, not so good with the deacons. Deacons and I just didn't get along because I just look at them and tell them what I thought. And I learned then that 60-year-old men don't like 20-year-old men to tell them what to do. And so even if you're right, I still know that I was right. And so, but I did more youth ministry in that Pokemon club than I ever did while I had the paid position at a local church. Parents would bring their kids, and I'd sit down with the parents on the side, and they'd say, yeah, we brought my son here today because he just had a rough week. And I knew that this would be something he enjoyed. I said, really? He said, yeah, you know, he's engaged in this and that. And I said, okay. So what do you do? Well, I work for so-and-so, but I'm also the local scoutmaster. Oh, really? I was in Boy Scouts. I made it until Life Scout before I found a girlfriend and ended up not making it to Eagle. And he's like, oh, yeah, we hear that a lot, you know. And I said, okay, yeah. And he sits there and goes, man, I don't know. You know, my son's 13, and raising a 13-year-old is difficult. And I just looked at him and said, yeah, you know, if God didn't give me wisdom on how to raise my kids, and those are those two over there, there's no way I'd be able to do it. Now, in that moment, had he been looking for spiritual answers to his questions, he might have sat there and said, so what do you mean you ask God for wisdom and he gives it to you? Or maybe a few weeks later, he'd circle back around and ask the question. But in that case, he just kind of went, oh, and then moved on with the conversation. And so what I've learned from all of this is this. Making disciples is not about memorizing some kind of evangelistic script and selling Jesus like you would a lost car or a used car. Okay? Making disciples is about walking alongside other people and then seeing if God is at work in their hearts and joining, becoming really good at knowing whether he is or not and joining him in that work and helping them fall in love with him over time. See, one of the problems we do is we ask people to say yes to Jesus before they know him. Okay? And what I want to do in this case is it's not about them liking me, and it's not about them waiting and hoping that they ask a question. Instead, I'm very intentional about engaging new groups of people and mobilizing prayer on their behalf and asking people to pray. And then as people pray, then I expect that God is going to give me opportunities to engage them in conversation. And it goes like this. What kind of conversation do you have first? Well, you have casual conversation. Hey, what's up? How you doing? You know, hey. All of the different kind of things and the responses that go with it. It costs people nothing to do that. But if they get to know who you are and you get to know their name and you start talking to your prayer buddies and saying, hey, could you pray with me? I've been engaging in this Pokemon club and I've gotten to know a guy named Mark. You know, would you pray that Mark and I could have moved beyond casual conversation, maybe to some meaningful conversation? And your buddies start praying for you. God starts working. You're sitting there talking with Mark one day, and he goes, yeah, you know, it's really rough raising a kid these days. It's been a struggle this week. And I go, well, tell me about that. Now what have we done? We've moved past casual conversation into meaningful conversation. And I'm talking with him and hearing his story, not offering any advice, really. But then I'm going to reveal that I'm a spiritual person to Mark, and I believe that God is involved in life. Not in a weird, obnoxiously religious way, but a conspicuously spiritual way. And I look at him and I go, hey, Mark, I agree with you. Raising kids these days is rough. And if God didn't help me out, there's no way I'd be able to do it. And I've not done anything offensive. But what I've done is I've opened the door that if God is moving in Mark's heart, that he knows that I'm a safe place to begin having those kind of conversations. And if he's not ready yet, I don't want to do anything before he's ready. I mean, let's think about this. You know, it talks about the fields are white unto harvest. Let's go ahead and do it. But some fields aren't ready yet. We need to get really good at walking in the cornfield and checking to see if it's ready to harvest rather than getting in the combine and driving it through a field before we know. What happens if you harvest corn before it's ready? You got something that's not good for seed and it's not good for food. We do that all the time with the gospel. We're not asking the King of Kings and Lord of Lords if he's ready for us to harvest this field yet. We just get in and we think, let's go. And we start driving it through. And those of us from the South are the worst about it. Trust me, I know. I was one of those guys. But then those of us from the North make the other mistake where we never talk about our faith because we're worried of what people would say. And that's not good. And I know there's people in the middle of that. Those are the two extremes. But we've got to get really good about engaging people in meaningful ways and joining into their world and having conversations with them. And in that, creating avenues that they can realize that they can come to us and have a safe place to ask their questions. So one of the I've done many things. Started the Pokemon Club. I've studied Taekwondo. I'm a purple belt in Taekwondo. I've studied Krav Maga. I've done that for a year and a half and really enjoyed it. I got my EMT license and certification just because I wanted to be around the same group of people for 9 months. You can have a lot of meaningful conversations with people when you're tying them to a backboard. And it got to the point I was one of the oldest guys in the class. And so people would come up to me and say, why are you taking this class? And I say, well, I like to help people. You know, I feel the presence of God when I'm helping people get through the worst day of their life. And able to do that. And they're like, really? And so it got to the point where I was almost the grandpa of the group, which is really funny for somebody in their 30s to say. And they would come up to me and they'd go, hey, the girls especially, they would go, could we be partners for when we give each other shots? Because I know that you'll do it right. Because I studied. Because in your 30s, you've learned how to study. And you realize you don't want to have to pay for this a second time. And so those were the kind of things that I have done. And we would sit there and talk. And I would ask them about their lives and ask them about their girlfriends. And I considered myself, whether they saw it or not, someone who was shepherding and taking spiritual responsibility of that very small community for the time that I was there. And advocating for that community before the Lord. Lord, this is a group of wonderful men and women who've dedicated their lives to be on the front lines, to run towards the gunfire in order to help people in the worst day of their life. Would you give me the opportunity to help them fall in love with you and realize how incredible they are in your plan of how things work in the world today? And mobilizing other people to pray with me and to engage this group of people. And having a great time in the process. Have you any of you guys played like Skyrim or any of those like games online and stuff like that? World of Warcraft, Dungeons and Dragons even, if we can admit that in church. You know, those kind of games. I love those games because I think that they're great for life. You know, you go through life and you get experience points. And then you level up. In fact, I don't like to tell people that I'm 39 years old. I like to look at them and say, I'm level 39. Because it sounds so much cooler. And everyone knows that the game doesn't get good until you're at least level 40. Because then you start getting some uber skills. All right? And then I get to pick what skills I want to learn. I go, this year I'm going to learn lock picking. There's a thing. You can buy lock picks. And you can sit there and find locksmiths that you can make friends with who will teach you how to lock pick. And that's a kind of cool skill to learn. You know? Then you could sit there and go, you know, I want to learn how wilderness medicine. And you can go out and take courses in wilderness medicine and be able to save people's lives and everything. I studied to be on a CERT team with Multnomah County. That was a lot of fun, learning all those skills. I was around the same people for hours, like every Saturday for 2 or 3 months or something like that. That was really cool. And it was fun getting called out by the fire department to go when the winds came through and knocked over some power lines. And my job was to sit there with a flashlight and make sure that pedestrians didn't walk through this section of the sidewalk in downtown Portland. And it was really cool to get the certification from the fire department thanking me for my service to the city that day. And it goes in my collection of things that level up my character. We can live exciting lives intentionally engaging people who don't know Jesus. Guys, if you want to learn about motorcycle riding, you can go get a Harley. And you can justify it to your wife as a ministry expense. There is nothing wrong with that. Because there is a whole culture around a Harley-Davidson motorcycle. Just ask Skip. Okay? There is a whole lifestyle around going and camping at different campgrounds and being around new people and having that Harley that when people hear you ride in, they come over to talk to you. They're like, hey, when did you get that? How much did it cost? You know, is it hard to repair? You know, those kind of questions. And there are iconic things like Harleys that you can do that with and have all this kind of conversations with people. And in that, you can get to know them. You can go and join clubs and get to know people there or walk into shops and talk to shop owners and get invited to breakfast, which is what he's done, and other things like that. As part of this process, if you want to take up fly fishing, you can go join groups that do fly fishing. If you like to do hiking or want to get better at it and improve your health, you can join groups that like to go hiking on the weekend. I follow a bunch of them on Instagram. There are tons of things that we can do and have a blast doing and engage with them for a period of time. Now, let me tell you how I judge whether I'm going to stick with it or not. I start something new and I get in for the minimum amount of cost that I can get in. So I might go for the Yamaha, not the Harley. Okay? The minimum amount of cost. And then I find people who can teach me and help me be better. And I start to talk with them and engage with their lives. And if I'm not invited over to their homes, then I might sit there and invite them to another event because I don't want to take up the time in doing the activity, maybe having the conversations. Maybe it's more appropriate to do it in a coffee shop afterwards. Then we have casual conversations that become meaningful conversations. And then as I open the door for meaningful conversation, there's the opportunity for those to become spiritual conversations. And when they have spiritual conversations, this is how I answer every single question. I do this. You know, that's an interesting comment you just made there. That I don't want to shove anything down your throat. But when I was in a similar situation, I read a story in the Bible or a verse in the Bible that really helped me. And if you're interested, I'd love to share it with you, but I don't want to do that if you're not interested. Open the door. If they're interested, they sit there and say, hey, yeah, tell me about that. Okay, well, there's a story. And then I just say it in my own words right there. And I say, now that helped me. I don't know if it helped you. What do you think about it? There it is. We've just had a spiritual conversation. Super simple. They might like, oh, no, that doesn't really fit my situation. Say, okay, I understand, because not everyone's the same. Easy enough. But what's interesting is I found that those spiritual conversations start to multiply. And after you have anywhere from 5 to 15 of those things, then you go, you know what? You're asking a lot of great questions, and I think the answers to those are in the Bible. And if you're interested, I'd love to sit down for coffee sometime and talk with some of these stories. You just let me know when and where. And once again, that ball's in their court. And if God is working in their heart, by this time you're calling you're texting all your people, like you got your little WhatsApp group, and you're like, hey guys, start praying for Mark, because Mark is asking spiritual questions and we're having conversations, and I just invited him to a discovery group. And they're praying because God is the one working in the heart with Mark when you're not there. And he's the one moving him. And Mark eventually will come to you and say, yeah, that's interesting. I'd love to be a part of that. One of the things we're doing at Contagious Disciple Making is we're creating these summer internships that are called Creative Engagement Teams. And this next one that we're doing, hopefully next summer, if I can get enough people involved, is using photography to engage people. And we're going to use photography and do a project called Portland Tattoo Stories. and go into the different tattoo artists and ask them questions and then post articles that we write up on a blog and then go up to different people and say, hey, could you tell me the meaning behind that tattoo? It's really cool. And listen to their story, take photographs of the tattoo if they give us permission, and post the story and the photographs up on a blog. And at the end of the summer, take the top 100 stories and photographs and publish that in a book where the sales of that coffee table book would go to drill wells or fund food or something like that in various countries. Cool project. But the whole point of the project is to get people or get around people who wouldn't normally be inside of a church. I'm going to do another one called Refugee Stories, where we do the same thing. We go around refugees and we basically sell them this. We say we believe that a lot of people have misunderstandings about who refugees are and what they do and where they come from. If you don't mind, we'd love to sit down with you, get your story, take some photos, post them online, and then produce a book and use the sales from those books to help provide funds for needy refugee families that are coming into the United States, provide furniture and things like that. That's a really cool thing. And it'll open doors like crazy to be involved. And at the same time, I can get people who might not consider themselves evangelists or missionaries, but love photography and love Photoshop and love talking to people and are interested in tattoos or refugees, and I can get them involved in a team and they could learn that being a missionary in Portland is possible and it's not this terrible thing. And I could teach them how to mobilize prayer, how to talk about what they do, and how to engage people that wouldn't come inside the doors of a church. You see, it's all about how do I come alongside people and help them find and follow Jesus. And let me give you some concrete stories and then we'll be done. So there was a guy we trained, who was trained by a guy that I trained, who was an extreme introvert. He didn't mind talking to people, but he didn't want to go out and meet people. Okay? And he's like, well, how am I going to do this? But he happened to be a student at the University of Southern California. So he had one of those little bitty whiteboards that he sat there and put into his backpack. And when he would get to the study hall, he always made sure to study in public. And he would pull out that whiteboard, he'd pray over it, say, Lord, what do you want me to write on this whiteboard today? And one day he wrote out, you are not an accident. And he put it so everyone who walked by his table could see it. And he put his head down and he studied. And people would walk by and they'd go, thanks, man, I really needed to hear that today. And eventually a guy walked by and says, what do you mean I'm not an accident? I was an unplanned pregnancy. My mom gave me up for adoption. I was in and out of the foster system all my life. And it's a miracle that I'm even here in school. And this young man, once somebody else started the conversation, had an incredible ability to turn it around and say, you know what, the answers to your questions are found in the Bible. Would you like to get together with some friends of yours and read it? I can come to your dorm room. Well, yeah, that'd be okay. When's good for you? Tonight? All right, I'll be there. You gather your friends, how's 9 o'clock? All right. Showed up and the guy had brought four friends to his dorm room. They sat down and read Genesis 1:1 through 2:3, the creation story. And as part of that, they asked the questions, right? What does this tell us about God? What does this tell us about people? If we believe this is from God, what difference would it make in our lives? And then, who do you know that you could share this story with? Now, they ended up sharing the story with someone else, and he always asks at the end, he says, was this good for you? It's the second date question, right? Was this good for you? Because we never ask them to commit to a 26-week Bible study, because you can't even get Christians to do that. Okay? You only ask them for the one. And if God is working in their hearts, they'll come back for the next one. And so he goes, was this good for you? Do you want to get together again? And he said, like, yeah, let's do it. All right, when do you want to do it? How about in a couple days? Okay. And he gets there and they say, well, you know, I told my fraternity brother about this and he wants to join the group. Is that okay? And the guy goes, no. But I tell you what, you can go and start this group with your fraternity brother and maybe some of his friends. You just do the thing we're doing here. And every time he'd ask the same questions and they would read the story from the Bible. And then the guy would go and lead that group. Well, before anyone in the first group became a follower of Jesus and be baptized, they had started three other groups of people who were reading the Bible. And they basically were all baptized at the same time. It looked like 20 people were saved overnight, when it took about 26 weeks to make it happen. Because we believe in going slow to go fast. We don't generally fall in love in one encounter. It takes multiple encounters, particularly since we have a culture that's telling us so many lies about who Jesus is. We have to expose them to Scripture so they could learn who the King of Kings and Lord of Lords really is. So that was one case. I had another buddy who was in Dallas, Texas, who was also an introvert. It's really funny. Introverts are great at this. I don't know why, but they are. He ended up deciding, well, hey, you know what? I'm going to go to the same gym, you know, 24-hour fitness, at the same day, you know, same days of the week, same time of the day. You know what that's like. You start seeing the same people. Okay, and you know that you're in when you start getting the bro grunt. It's a, you know, which what that means is, I recognize your strength and power, but do not consider you a threat. You may be in my presence. Okay? And he got to the point where he was getting the bro grunt from these guys. And one day, one of the guys came in. He just looked terrible. And girls wouldn't say this to each other, but my buddy looked at the other guy and goes, dude, you look beat. Like, yeah, man, it's been a rough week. You want to work out together so that we can, so we don't dog it? Because I'm not feeling great myself. So they start working out together. What's the first thing you do when you start working out together with a guy? So what do? You start talking. Turns out the guy is an accountant. And he asked my buddy, what do you do? And he goes, well, I do logistics and community transformation, help people discover God. What the hell does that mean? and he explained community renewal, and he explained the other thing, and then he stopped, because he really didn't want to go into that. He was kind of feeling a little shy. And the guy goes, that last thing, what's that last thing? And he says, well, I found that there's a lot of people who don't feel comfortable going to church to find their answers to their spiritual questions, and I try to help them find the answers to the questions that they've had. Do you have any questions you wish you could ask God? It's like, yeah, why did he kill my brother? Mm-hmm. Well, my buddy was in a unique position because he had been trained to answer questions like that. You see, God won't put you in a place that you're not equipped to be involved in. And so he was there. He talked with the guy for a while about the nature of God. And he says, you know what? We need to talk about this more in depth. And maybe you have some other questions. If you want to get together with some buddies of yours sometime and ask these and have this conversation, I'd love to be a part of it. The young man looked at him and said, how about 5 o'clock at Starbucks across the street tomorrow? Okay, I can be there. So he showed up, and the guy had invited 6 of his friends. And they were all atheists and agnostics, and they spent the next 2 hours bashing God and bashing church and bashing religion. And he just sat there and let it happen. Why? Because he knew that he didn't have to defend God. God is good enough at that himself. At the end of the time, he looked at the man and he said, you know, guys, we've been talking a lot about God. What if next time we get together, we allowed God to do some talking about himself? Would you be into that? They were like, well, yeah. How about we meet this time next week? And if you have some friends that want to be involved, bring them along and we'll see what happens. They're like, okay. He showed up the next week, and there were 16 people there. And he started a Discovery Bible study with them, right there at Starbucks. You know, it's not rocket science. It's a lot of fun. And what we have to commit to doing is learning new things and being very intentional about why we're doing it. And if you want to join, like, my Facebook group, you can. And you just have to find me on Facebook, Paul D. Watson, D for David or Dork. And tell me that you want to be invited. It's a secret group, so you're not going to be able to find it. Just say you want to be a part of the secret group. I'll let you in and let you know where I'm doing, what I'm doing, and praying for. I've got 3 areas that I'm engaging in people right now. One is a local coffee shop. I've had a chance to meet the owner, talk to a lot of people, and do a lot of neat ministry through there, and it's been a lot of fun. The second one's a pub. I dropped my son off at Boy Scouts, and there's a pub down the road where I can go work. That one's not working out so well because it's so new, it doesn't have a regular community yet. But I've gotten to know the young lady behind the counter, and there's now starting to be a new community that seems to be emerging from there because they just added on a place, and they show sports. So guys are starting to show up on a Monday evening and watch football. And so I'm hoping to start engaging that. Even though I'm not the greatest at football, I've learned that not being the greatest is my advantage because I can sit there and say, what is that? And they're like, why don't you know football? I grew up in Singapore. Oh. Well, that's a tight end. Well, what? A tight end. That's not what we would say. No, no, no. That's a position. Okay. Well, all right. What do they do? And then you can have them explain to you the ins and the outs of the game. I don't have to be perfect. I just have to be imperfect enough to ask questions. And the third place is this place called the Interactive Museum of Gaming and Puzzlery. There's over 5,000 games and puzzles in this place. It's a nonprofit organization, and for a $100 donation annually, I can take my family of five there, and we could pull any game they have off the shelf and sit down at the tables and play it for hours and have a great time as a family. And then other people are playing games, and my kids will wander and start jumping into games with them. Last time we were there, there was a group of people that were playing Dungeons and Dragons in the back for like 8 hours. So my son saw that and he goes, I can be in that group. So for Christmas, he asked for all of the Dungeons and Dragons books, and he's a stat guy, so he has memorized them. He's engaged his Boy Scout troop in playing Dungeons and Dragons, and now is getting invited to do groups there with them. And he's looking at engaging this group of people and making friendships. And my son's the chaplain's aide for our Boy Scouts group. Really cool stuff. And it's cool to see your son stepping out and do that. He is the biggest introvert in my entire family. But he's doing it. So we can have massive amounts of fun and make a difference at the same time. One time I was learning Krav Maga, which is an Israeli martial art form, and I was looking for a new studio to practice. And I was going down hall, and I saw one, and I pulled off, and I went in, and it was a thing. And so I talked to the owner briefly, but then I came back a few days later. And the owner was empty. He was working on some paperwork, so he invited me in to talk to him. Turned out he had been a U.S. Marine, served two tours in Afghanistan, came back from there and became a canine officer for Milwaukee. And so I'm sitting there talking with him and everything, and he said, hey, last time you were in here, you mentioned that you were a pastor. What church you go to? And I said, well, actually, I go to a church, but I'm not really a pastor of any church. He says, what does that mean? I said, well, I'm a pastor for people who don't fit into church. What does that mean? I said, well, when was the last time as a U.S. Marine you walked into a church and they understood what you went through in Afghanistan? Psh, never. And I said, right? And I said, when was the last time that you as an officer had time to go to church because of your shifts that you worked? And he says, almost never. I said, there's nurses out there and firefighters and other people just like you. I said, as a business owner, do you have time to go to church on Sunday? No. I said, but I bet you have spiritual questions. And my job is to help people like you answer those questions. He's like, all right, here's one for you. I'm like, okay.
Set him up.
And he said, why does the church turn men into such pansies? And here's the funny thing. I had just spent the previous month reading about David's mighty warriors. And I sat down and I said, well, and I fumbled with my answer because I'm not perfect. But then I sat there and said, you know what though? One of the most beloved people in the entire Bible was one of the greatest warriors. And his name was David. And he started the first special forces group that I'm aware of in history. And they were called the Mighty Men. And here are some of the things that they did. And I sat there and I unfolded it for him. And I said, look, our God realizes we live in a chaotic world. And we need men who will stand between order and chaos and protect the lives of its citizens as long as we're broken and fallen. He looked at me and he said, all right. You know, if you want to come here and study and do your thing here, that'd be okay. All right. Now, I couldn't afford the monthly thing right then, but it would have been awesome. And I have an invitation. And I bet the guy hasn't forgotten me, even though it's been a year and a half. See, this is what it means to live a life of engagement. We love God, we build a relationship with Him, and we start hanging out with people who don't know Him. We have spiritual conversations, and when we can read the Bible stories with them finally, we ask some simple questions. What does it say about God? What does it say about people? And if we believed it was true, what difference would it make? And who can you share this with before the end of the week? And that is all it takes. Paul the Apostle said in the Bible, in Corinthians chapter 9, verses 19, it says, for although I'm free from all people, I've made myself to all in order to win more people. To the Jews, I become like a Jew to win Jews. To those under the law, like one under the law, though myself am not under the law, to win those under the law. To those who are outside the law, like the one outside the law, not being outside God's law, but underneath the law of Christ to win those outside the law. To the weak, I become weak in order to win the weak. I become all things to all people so that I might, by all means, save some. Now, I do all this because of the gospel, that I may become a partner in its benefits. And my prayer for you guys is that when you leave here, and as you go into the world, that you would see that engaging the world can be a very exciting place. But even more importantly, as we start to help people find and follow Jesus and fall in love with Him, we become a partner with the gospel, and we get to experience its benefits. Let's pray. You know, God, I want to thank you so much for the men here today. I want to thank you so much for the sacrifice they made in being away from family, even though they might not consider that. I know that it's like, because my daughter was throwing up this afternoon, and I got those text messages from my wife. And I would ask, Father, that you would give them this time back in blessing. I don't know how you do that, but there have been times I've sat down to work and blown out more than 2 hours than I did an entire week one time. And I just think it's because you focus and multiplied my time and because I gave it to you. And it's a mystery to me why you do it sometimes and not the others, but I am grateful for when you do it. And I would pray that blessing upon each of the men in this room today, whether they be students and have homework to do, or whether they be fathers and own businesses and have work they need to do as well. I ask that they would be able to share in the gospel by helping others find and follow you. I ask that you would bless them with the benefits of that come to people who are walking out and sharing the gospel. And I pray that you give them great joy and they would live full lives, learning new things and having a grand time doing it. And at the same time, be able to say, hey, this was the guy I met when I learned fly fishing. And this is the guy I met when I learned how to do Taekwondo. And this time, well, that's that time I tried hang gliding. Didn't work out so well, but I met this guy in the hospital. And I just pray, Father, that all of those opportunities would be opportunities not only to enrich their lives, but to bring you glory and honor forever and ever. We ask this in the mighty name of Jesus Christ. Amen. Amen.